Okay, well, I guess we'll get started. I'm Barbara Levy, the journalist in residence, looking right into a bright light. And my partner in crime today is Jean-Pierre Hébert, who's the artist in residence. And since we're both concerned with communication in different ways, that we thought we'd combine our forces. So I'm going to talk a little while, and then he's going to talk a little while. In between, we might put you to work with some art. So this is, you're going to get a discussion about illustrations from two different points of view. Now, I would say I'm generally a little bit more concerned about how the information is conveyed through illustrations, and Jean-Pierre is very much interested in art, the way that the communication as a form of art, and in fact they are, and I think it's getting more so now that we have many more communication aids like PowerPoint to help us. So I call that an extra dimension, illustrations in physics, because there's sometimes many things you can do with illustrations that you cannot do with words, or certainly not in as well. You know what, I'm going to have to put on my glasses to read the arrows on here. So thought I'd start out with the negative. I just downloaded a view graph from a presentation that was done to the public here. And first of all, it's just much too much information. Number one guiding rule for illustrations is simplicity. You know, keep it simple and try to have, you know, each illustration mostly convey one point and not a whole bunch of points. Now, I'll get to that later. So that's on the negative side. Now, all the others are going to be positive. So as I said, you can save a lot of words by using a picture instead. So here's a structure of one of these high-temperature superconductors that's a layered structure. And you can try to diagram in such a way that you emphasize one of the key points in here is the copper oxide planes where most of the action happens. Oh yeah, I'm sorry, I forgot that was from a sodium cobaltate story. So this one is another layered structure. It's cobalt oxides on the critical layers. So you can, it would be much harder to convey this in words. It's nice to see it in a picture. So another reason to use illustrations is to show the real world of experiments, especially if you're communicating to a general audience. People want to know, you know, what does the world of physics really look like? You can tell them, but, you know, they hear about people trapping gases. Well, this is one of the cells in which you trap the gases, and that's a magnetic coil, so it's real-world physics. And it happens to be a very pretty picture as well. You can get a feeling for the size of physics. So this is a detector at RIC. And this is on the other extreme. This is very small, and I think people, the general public especially, still is pretty thrilled by seeing, you know, real pictures of atoms. It's pretty amazing what can be done. So, yet another reason to use illustrations is to summarize the data graphically. So, this is a really simple example, pie chart. Couldn't get much simpler than that. I'm going to pause and just come on in if you want. In words, it takes a lot more words to say what percent of each bunch of the atmospheric gases are put into the atmosphere each year. But to summarize them, you can not only see the percentages, but also get a feeling for their relative sizes. Here's a flow chart comparing two types of car engines. And there graphically you see that this one, which I think is a hybrid, is getting only, you know, much less from, is using much less input for the same output, and you see that very graphically. We often use illustrations to show the key results of experiments. And with some experiments, you're able to do that in a very beautiful way. So this is from one of these condensed gas experiments and showing probably a BEC peak, momentum peak. I didn't put an example of graphs because I didn't want to get into too much of that, because that's a pretty standard thing. I think everybody does use graphs. And I think most people are doing a pretty good job of it. The only comment I would make about graphs is that in public presentations, very often people don't make the labels large enough so that you can read it. And keep in mind, the reader may not have ever seen a line graph like that. Make the label big. Don't put a symbol, put a word. What is it really? What is the physical quantity on each scale? And say, before you talk about the way the curve's going this way or that way, say this is this quantity versus that quantity, so that people are with you.
Question about this image.
Yeah.
Do you think that the reason why it is impressive is more the artistic reasons of, say, the color scheme that was chosen, for the scale that was chosen for the vertical scale of it?
I remember the first time I saw evidence for BEC, and people report they had BEC, and then I read the paper and I saw this big peak. And I was very impressed. I think it had a visual impact to see the sharpness of that peak. And yeah, the color made it much more dramatic, and it makes it nice for people like Jean-Pierre to look at. If you're making a public presentation, don't forget that they may take as much away from the artistic pleasure as from the physical content, much as we hate to admit that. But.
This is a vertical question. There's a, you're probably seeing the grayscale.
Yeah.
People may just miss the point and say the second peak is also maybe as also less impressive, but also quite impressive.
Yeah.
But the from the bigger peak, you have to come with the red. Oh, that is a real thing.
This vertical scale is arbitrary. Uh-huh. Yes.
Of the color, the way you assign colors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you can. Okay, now you're suggesting.
Impressive, and then it looks less impressive.
Yes. Presumably all three of them are the same scale.
No. This is the position.
But you could have chosen the vertical scale, which was half as much as the big peak look half as tall compared to the
size.
Okay, so here's a new strategy in presenting your results. Pick the color scale is going to really emphasize what your.
So if I push to the extreme, there's another pretty famous graph, which is this mirage.
Yeah.
It's an oval.
Oh, yes.
There's a mirage.
Right.
There is not even the vertical. So this one's color have a reason, it's a vertical scale. There, the color is just painted on the two plates, which have a mirage.
Oh, and it's not there.
No. I think it's, because of the ring on our side is much higher.
You're saying there's no quantitatively physically measured thing that is represented by the color.
They really paint these two points as a pink or red. And then you'll see them, you're right.
Yeah.
Colorized.
I guess, we assume and trust that usually if we see a color scale, usually, especially if it has a bar in the side, we usually assume it's linear, but maybe not. Okay, and then to explain phenomena, and I think this is where we could do think a lot harder about how to really convey the physics of what you're doing, especially the more abstract, maybe the more help you need from simple diagrams that help convey to the public. And actually, I'll give you a little warning, we're going to set you to work to try your own little sketches of phenomena in a minute. But from the simplest thing of just showing atoms transferring from one cell to another depending on the energy levels shown in red there. This one I thought was a particularly creative attempt by NIST group in Colorado to explain the difference between atoms pairing in molecules, where they get close together, to pairing in something like a BEC superconducting pair, where if you look closely, the dancers each have a partner with whom they're making eye contact. But here's... But on the average, the individual members of the partner are further spaced than other than the average spacing of the people. So that's a very clever use of, here's another simple diagram just to convey to the public. The atomic, I guess this is a scanning tunneling microscope, emphasizing that the tip itself is made of atoms. So what you're measuring is really very much at the atomic scale. And this, I thought, just a simple way to convey to the public that neutrinos are going through you every, how often? I don't even know what now, that number, what that number is, how many go through each second.
Every 10,000 seconds.
Yeah. And Zhao Gang had this one to show his very his new concept about string nets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the same as one of these screensavers,
John? I mean, you can sell it at a screensaver. Oh, whoops.
The screensaver that draws
snakes. There's a pipe. Yeah, there's a pipe screensaver.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a small 3D
monitor. Yeah. Okay.
Perhaps you could just get all the microcomputers of the world to do computations in your theory by their screensavers.
So another use of illustrations is to show how experiments are done. This was an illustration of how we detected some gases, sodium gases, I think, by looking at the absorption of sodium from Earth as this planet passed in front of a star. And here's the light that we would get from the star. And as the planet passed through the star, the light got dim. And then the blue light from the sodium got even dimmer by this amount while the transit took place. And of course, those amounts are greatly exaggerated in this picture. And there's another one, just simple line drawing. Just ignore the bottom here. But in the top, it's a way that they had to have loading and trapping some, I think, molecules that were coming in from the left. And you can see that the magnetic field lines are acting like rubber bands, just holding the molecules, keeping them from going off to the right. And as soon as the molecule comes in, then they change the magnetic field, so it essentially closes the door behind the molecule. And then just to delight the eye, and Jean-Pierre is going to talk a lot more about how the art can delight the eye and the mind. This is a phase diagram. So, pretty complicated one. Okay, so that's all I was going to say. And we thought we would have you try your hand at making some sketch of some physical phenomena, maybe one on which you're working, and maybe by dividing you in groups. So I have some big pieces of paper and some magic markers, and we'll give you about 10 or 15 minutes. Now, maybe you want to group up with people who are working on some of the same things that you're working on and put your heads together about some of the physical phenomena. Otherwise, just maybe two or three of you get in a group and chat about what you might try to illustrate. Do I have to sign you into groups? Is there anyone else was from string theory here?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, there you go. You work with Joe. He's done this once before, and he's pretty good, so you... Okay, Zhao Gang, you've got someone to... Who's here from the Exotica program? Do you two want to work together? Okay, and there, and then yeah. Chris, okay. And then from the atomic, the cold gases? Anyone from cold gases? There you go, and Pierre. Okay, we got three there. Then where are you, what are you working? Cool down. Why don't you work with those guys? Okay. Why don't you come on over and work with Tony and you've done it before? That exempts you? Yeah. Do you want to work with Tony? Do you know each other?
We do very well.
Yeah.
I'm never went to
junior. You never what?
I want to work with somebody younger than me, so I can order him around. Yes. So with him, it doesn't work.
Okay.
So we are not going to work.
What do you guys work on?
I'm a graduate student in Art Commence Matter, but I'm just beginning. So.
Okay, and you?
I'm with us.
Okay, well, here's a young professor here. He's gonna. You want to get together? Yeah. He's working on quantum chaos, right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay. Jean-Pierre, why don't you hand out some of these?
So I had a bunch of pictures. I had some very nice pictures.
I don't know. Do you want your group to work over here?
Yeah, we figured we needed a
Yeah, okay. Jean-Pierre, the elder gentleman, is it Marvin or Melvin? Something like that. What's his name, Marvin or Melvin?
Actually, I don't know. I have to
check. Okay.
I probably have something for
you. Okay. Hi, do you want to join a group?
Well, I missed the beginning of this talk because I was talking to someone else over in Phelps.
Oh, I didn't say anything that would have helped you.
Okay.
That was a good excuse. Do you want to go? Do you know Joe? You want to go? What?
I kind of know Tony. I don't know Joe. I mean, I know who he is. Everybody does.
Okay. I don't think Tony's.
I can illustrate him, and I do CMB power spectrum stuff, so I'm certainly accustomed to illustrating power spectrum.
Why don't you do that? Work with Tony's a guy.
But I can just go to the website and pull down all sorts of things I've already done.
Okay, why don't you just draw a sketch of what you've already done? Maybe Tony.
Power spectrum of what?
Yeah.
Well, work on CMB.
Do you know what's the name of
turn yourself off, huh?
Yeah.
I was thinking about the internet.
What about this? I'm just helping.
Because we don't make the measurements, it's not what you think. Not the face, that's the kind of the popular video.
Okay, I'm going to call time. Ding, ding, ding. Okay, I'm going to call time. I will have some brief presentations of our posters. And what I observe in going around is that the process of drawing an accurate illustration made you talk about the physics. And because you really, I mean, there, I've had these discussions too about figures in physics today. And, you know, is it okay to present it this way? Or, you know, and someone will say, well, physically, no, it's not exactly what happened, even though it looks nice. So simple attempts have their complications. Let's start with you all, because I think that's fairly easy. You want just a spokesperson?
Pierre.
Pierre, okay.
All right, so we decided to illustrate the concept of entanglement. Okay. And the idea of entanglement is that you know precisely the state of a system, but you don't know anything about the states of the parts of the system. So we figured that that's the state of the American electorate before the election. So you know that after the election, one group of people will be happy and the other one will not be happy, but you don't know which one it is, so that's how we did it.
I think it's terrific.
Can you apply those inequalities to the
we don't know yet.
Don't do it.
Yeah. Okay, you guys want to start? Go. Go ahead.
You did the physics. Okay. All right, so this is supposed to illustrate the transition from...
Here, I'll hold the other end.
Okay. From quantum to classical... as a function of temperature or length scale or something. So decoherence, so you have some very complicated quantum object. Then you can see a structure emerging, a classical face emerging, but there's still interference patterns. Mm-hmm. And then the classical, and a very hot classical object, so it's, you can see the wavy sort of outline. Because it's getting, it's vibrating so much you can't even see the face anymore. So it's quantum classical transition as a function of something, temperature perhaps.
Great. Okay. Jatila.
I can't draw.
You can't draw. She wanted to run home and get her computer program.
I do CMB stuff. So I have a tuning fork and a drum head and a sphere. And so to try to explain to people what is a power spectrum going from a tuning fork with a sine wave and then one frequency, and then what it looks like on a drum head when you have two dimensions and a sphere, like a water balloon where you hit it, and if you could freeze it, and you get all the little lumps and bumps, and then you get the power spectrum, and the higher out corresponds to
can
smaller.
Can we see the power spectrum?
Well, it's not really drawn very well. You know what it looks like, right? The power spectrum. That's what I say, I can't draw. It's got a big bump at 200, and then there's this third one, and then it gets smaller and smaller.
Okay. Well, was this intended for some particular field of research or just?
How to illustrate? Oh, it's. I'm not in ITP. I'm in the physics department. I came for a talk on art and physics.
That's okay. We'll get more artsy.
That's what I work on. And so, in terms of how to explain it to kids and explain it to the public, to use the analogies.
She works on cosmic background radiation.
I wasn't sure if you were trying to explain oscillations of the sun or something like that.
You could use it for anything, anything that uses spectral harmonics.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. We didn't get very far. because you can see our sketches. Basically, I was explaining to Anthony the difficulties in trying to illustrate to the general public how black holes work and how black holes are seen by various observers. And so part of the problem here is, so we didn't actually come up with a solution, which is why this is blank over here. This Penrose diagram here I drew, this is what you would draw for experts, and they're able to get all the information that they need out of it, and it tells a lot of information. But to draw pictures, both of these, this is what's supposed to represent what's seen by someone free falling into a black hole. And this picture was supposed to represent, what this guy sees if he's going around a black hole. Neither of those are very good, and they're actually in both cases lying to some extent. And this is something that I, have problems with trying to explain, trying to draw pictures of how black holes work. And, there's this technical picture which gets it right, and then there are these ones that are easy to draw which don't really get it right and are kind of incorrect in some way.
But you illustrate the point well that it's not what, we'd like to see more illustrations that make the physics look simple to someone outside, but it's not easy. And you all are going to say that in spades, right?
This is an attempt to draw this, draw a gauge theory without using gauge field. So it's a difficult. And you know, you're one character of so-called this topological matter is related to the V2 gauge theory. But the thing is how to visualize that. And typically when people have a gauge theory, say, well, we have on pores, the gauge theory can have different flux that's on this side. Through the pores, you get the four different states on the pores. And in the kinetic matter, that is on the right-hand side, the left-hand side, actually, the four states are realized differently by those loops inside the matter going around the torus. And there is actually the quantum
entanglement on the surface of the torus.
Yeah. And this is not a real kinetic, that's a matters in the states which kind of running around. And so these two pictures are kind of due to each other. And so unfortunately, this
is only a picture expert, not a picture for the general public. It's getting there, yeah. Well, I think give you all a hand. That's great. Thank you. So now Jean-Pierre is going to talk about the artist perspective.
Yes, you are the expert and I am the general public. So what I have to say is also very important.
Is it turned back on?
Yeah,
so. First I will show a number of images.
John, you want to
put this on? Yes. First I will show a personal selection of images selected among the slides which are part of the KITP talks, just for the reason that I like them. And then we'll talk about illustrations. So the author is always mentioned somewhere at the back. And this was from a talk by André Linder in the Strings program. And was a very striking way to show his idea that we are living in one universe among many other universes that we do not share and do not really know anything about. And he was using a metaphor coming from Kandinsky. And this is another way of showing the same thing. So all of these are different universes. This, I don't even know what it relates to, but I think they are very beautiful images by Tom Banks, which were also presented last fall at the ITP. This shows how light reaches us after traveling across the universe. And as it's not traveling really in a linear way, because it's warped by light, it gives us the wrong impression about what and where the sources are. And this is by, is that condensed matter? this is really beautiful, I don't know what it is. This also was very interesting. These are images of Rayleigh-Benard, which are actually made at the physics department here at UCSB.
Can you move your computer? The computer is blocking the name of the computer.
Yes. And then there is more of that. So now we'll talk about showing and explaining physics. So here we have Albert Einstein at the blackboard. And having been around the ITP, I have really noticed how much blackboards are important for physicists. And it seems that everything kind of emerged spontaneously, and I thought of how Chopin was improvising at the piano and was at a very hard time to actually write down the music he had just played so that he could actually publish it and publish the scores and make some money, because he didn't like to make concerts. So actually it was a matter of survival for him to make the effort from going from the really free improvisation to art notes on paper. And actually, in physics, you start on the blackboard or in talks, and then you have to go to paper, you have to do talks to peers, and then your ideas have to emerge into science, into the public. You have to fight for budget to do implementations, get into industry, or hundreds of millions of dollars experiments in space or in super collider and so forth. So you need to communicate those ideas.
May I make a remark here?
Yes.
Because it was very interesting about this improvisation, because I discovered that there's human psychology as well when you do physics. That I personally, when I do research, I have to use white paper. If I visit some institute where they only have paper with lines, then I talk to a lot of physicists, and I discovered a lot of physicists have this problem, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I find that many physicists cannot do calculation with their lines on paper.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a kind of prison.
Yeah.
All those lines.
Yeah. So there seems to be, I don't know how widespread this is, whether it's 20% of physicists or 50% of physicists.
And if physicists can only do it on paper with lines?
There are some people, but in France especially, they have papers with squares.
Yes.
So in France, I find it especially difficult.
Yes, and to confirm your point, I have never seen a blackboard with lines.
But you go to the music department, you see blackboard with lines.
Yes, yes, you have to. Or in elementary school, because this is where you get started. So actually, another problem of illustration is for physics, like in math. Before, people were very happy to just have to deal with simple geometry, like Pythagoras. But now, if you deal with number theory, or if you go from Fermat to Weyl, or from Euclid to Riemann, or from Descartes to Gödel, then the rules of the game have changed considerably. And in physics, the same thing. Physics started to be a very concrete science, but now it's more and more abstract. And of course, it's more difficult to illustrate abstract ideas. Then there is a problem of dimensions. When you go from 3 to 10 plus time, then you have a problem. So I looked around and went to one of those books by Edward Tufte. Probably a lot of you know Edward Tufte is a kind of guru of graphics communication, and he has written several books. He has a website, he sells posters and all that. And actually, he always insists on style, on simplicity, and gives many examples of that, a few of them being related with science. Here we have some things that must deal with fluid mechanics, for instance. Here we can, I guess, these are Jupiter satellites and so forth. And the lesson that he gives is to trust clarity, style, and elegance. And here we have an image that is quoted in one of his books, and it's by Huygens. And it shows the Saturnian system. And then, in a different way, I like the light approach to convey concepts. And one of my favorite artists is Saul Steinberg. And looking in his books, you can find that many of his cartoons could actually illustrate concepts in physics. Like here we have this cat looking at a fish that could work for refraction. Here we have equilibrium. And his advice is to trust humor to convey concepts. And this is a representation of time and motion. So I also want to give some French quotes to train Tony's French. And so here, what you say in saving 1,000 words was a good scheme. Is worse better than a long discourse by Napoleon. And what you can conceptualize well, you will be able to explain very clearly, and the words for the explanation will come to you very easily. And this was by Boileau. So then looking at illustrations, all of these came from different talks. And of course, being the general public, I have a lot of problems with the first line. But actually, you don't. And so this is actually where the real physics are. Where I believe that I can understand something is actually on the second line. I don't know what I understand, but I think I am stricken, and my interest is tickled, and probably I will become as smart as I can be if I am driven by a good incentive, like a good graphic like that. And actually, coming back to the exercise you just did, this is what the string group did last fall. We had the same exercise of improvising illustration, and it's interesting that on the second line, we find the illustration of the press release which the KITP is sending out to the public about how brains annihilate themselves and create strings. Strings evolve and end up moving so fast that they create a gravitational wave. And this little square shows the hope that at some point we'll be able to detect this. So I think that this drawing is very successful in explaining in a cartoonish way, in four little drawings, something that is very, very intricate and up to date. But then there is the other side, which I like experiments. This was an interesting talk by Pierre Coulet, and he came with a pendulum, and actually with several pendulums, to explain how Robert Hooke and Newton came up at the emergence of experiments, of calculus, of the theory of gravitation, of the discovery of chaos. And those simple experiments were very powerful in conveying the message. So I think they should be behind the mind of somebody who wants to illustrate. And in another talk in the pattern group last fall also, Aaron Sharon distributed to everyone little samples of plastic sheets, and we were asked to tear them apart, and each of us was able to do an experiment, which was actually the subject of his talk, which was to see exactly how the sheet was tearing in a very fractal way. And it was a physical introduction that each of us could have, and was a very strong point about what he was going to talk about. So I like experiments, and actually years ago I was reading Scientific American, and I always liked the pages about the amateur scientist, and I found looking for them on the net that somebody has collected them and has made them available on a CD-ROM. So that's the address is if you're interested. If you can't make experiments, it's also interesting to actually discover things, I think, in a physical way. And I like those old tools which were the precursor of animations and movies, and were allowing people to actually see motion in a very physical way. And there are, for instance, little PDF files on the web that you can download to make little tops to actually show animations, so you can cut this out, glue it, put a match, and spin it, and you will have a very small and friendly zoetrope, which you can use to show any experiment you want to illustrate. But of course, now we have animations. These are coming from also from Rayleigh Benard, but they are not recordings. They are images made from simulation by Werner Pesch. I think they are interesting and beautiful, and but thinking of those experiments, I have found also that now you can do interesting experiments on the web. These are interactive remote virtual experiments that everybody can download from the web, and they are programmed using Java, using a system called Processing, and there are others. which sent to your computer Java code that will execute in a browser, but will give you control of the local elements. And I will give several examples of that. So you saw in this animation that the pointer was moving. It was moving because I was the one with my mouse actually dragging this string of letters. And it put me in command of the experiment as it can happen. So anything that can be programmed simply can travel to remote experimenters, and the remote experimenter in turn can have the benefit of the education that the experiment can provide. Here, there is something I could not record. There is a bug somewhere in my software, but it's a block of Jello in a cube, and with your pointer, you can manipulate the cube, and the block of Jello will bump around and following, you know, the laws of gravity and motion and elasticity and whatnot. And here, I have four light sources. And those little creatures react to the spread of light in the plane. And here my pointer is moving, actually, the light dots in real time after I downloaded the software. And so the creatures will change their behavior. So I can also use keys to cancel luminous dots, to move them, to create more creatures. And so I'm in full command of the experiment. And so I think it's a very interesting concept that could be used more widely to actually illustrate physics. Well, that's a bit long, so let's go to the next one. This shows how you can also display data using that, and the user will be able to see it from any angle he wish, and that is useful for his understanding of the data. So this shows a one-dimensional curve and the random data points or three-dimensional data that can be seen from any angle. This is something different. I can move the pointer and send it onto different locations in the plane, and wherever the pointer is, it will distribute sand. And so the sand here is filling those boxes. Each grain of sand is following, you know, the laws of gravity and the sand mechanics. And after filling this one, I'm going to go to this one. And it will last probably another 30 seconds. But I think it's very interesting. What do you say?
Can you start with a different word?
Which word?
Instead of having shh.
Oh, you can do whatever. Oh, no. This is part of the example. But all those examples come with their own code. So if I was modifying the original code, which I could do, then I could have any word. And I'm still using sand, yes. So here I have a leak of sand, so it's falling here. And when the sand will run out, I will click on the X key. And all the letters will disappear, and the sand will be subject to gravity. Here it goes. And look at the pile of sand. Now it regulates itself, and the slope becomes correct. So I think it's a very powerful way that should be used to actually transport knowledge.
What's happened on the left?
Where, here?
Yeah, on the left. It's just frozen.
Yeah, it's frozen, yes, because at the end of the QuickTime movie.
Oh, the two is not connected.
No, they are not connected. It's two different examples. I'm not following Edward Tufte principle to make it simple. I'm putting several illustrations on the same page. But you should never do that. Well, here it plays again. Okay, let's. So these are interesting. This is. I find this very interesting because it's so simple. These are droplets of water, and you can play with them and with superficial tension. And by moving your pointer, you create the changes. And here, it's a more complex illustration where you have sliders. And so after downloading the software, you are in control of the different parameters of the experiment. So you can make up your own mind and your own understanding on what this is about. Okay. And you can do the same kind of things. Some of you can work or may work using Mathematica. Mathematica as a system, almost like Java, to let you do Mathematica across the web, where you can create simulation models and let people actually play with those models remotely. And here I have a last illustration which shows that a lot of things are happening now in software and on the web. This shows how people had to look at images before on the left, and this was 3 or 4 years ago, and this is now. It's so simple to have a small camera and to be able to chat, and with Windows you can use chat and PowerPoint to make a presentation remotely. It doesn't work yet on Macintosh. Keynote cannot be transported like that easily, but those things are coming, and so we are entering a phase where very rapidly for courses and talks, presentations, we'll be able to use interactive whiteboards, blackboards, work together and send illustrations remotely. And well, this is it. This is also a Steinberg drawing, and I think it's a very good illustration of the curvature of space-time. Thank you.
A question for Jean-Pierre?
Maybe I'll just comment that this is the only institute of physics in the world with an artist in residence and a journalist in residence. And we are very, very proud of this.
Well, we are very proud to be here too.
Yeah, I'm personally very proud to have both of you here.
Thank you.
There's a there's a famous artist doing this twisted.
Escher.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's also very impressive.
We have an Escher upstairs.
I see.
Right.
But some of them are very, very mathematically pretty.
I don't think so.
Somewhere there used to be an Escher. Mm-hmm. It's in a closet now. Mm-hmm. Replaced by you.
Oh, thank you.
Many of you, especially on the upstairs, may have seen Jean-Pierre's art. One of the neatest things that he's done is, do you want to describe what you have your sand table?
Oh, yes, I can do that. Actually, I have a...
Because I think it's...
Actually, I probably can run my...
Can you tell me how did you generate this?
This?
Maybe I should come and talk to you sometime. You took Steinberg and the reverse
homework. Oh, he did it. I didn't. That's...
he did it?
Yes, yes.
Oh,
No.
Oh, I thought you did a Steinberg.
No. Oh, I have done Steinberg-like images as soon as I was a student and discovered him, because it's very easy to draw. But this is an original one. No. No. It's really done by hand, as he was. So I think if I start my screensaver. If I can find how to do that. Yes. Oh, that's not my sun piece, but that's part of my screensaver. That's the face of Mars. And actually, I have the face on Mars because these are drawings that I do on sand. I have built a large sand tray, and I did that after seeing images of the sand gardens in Kyoto. And as I am doing drawings with lines, which I program, I decided my lines could be in sand. And so here on this screensaver, I have merged images coming from Japan with some of the pieces that I do on sand. This is another one. And actually, it's interesting because it's very accurate. Here I have drawn all those very thin lines with a big ball that you see in the center. And the reason why it works is that I'm drawing those lines very close together. So when the ball comes against the first line, it will push back the sand next to the line before. So I can have very intricate details.
So those are drawn physically, not on a computer.
Yes, but actually computers are involved because the ball moves on the sand because under the sand there is a magnet, and the magnet is controlled by two motors, and the motors are driven by a computer.
John P. actually has a very nice machine.
Yeah, I see. Because you can draw by hand.
No. One person I showed that to just asked, are you doing that on the beach? I wish I could. Actually, in Santa Monica, I think that once a year, they have a big tractor which pulls a very big thing. I have never seen it. But it draws huge drawings on and huge patterns on the beach at Santa Monica.
I wonder, do you have an image from the earthquake that occurred in
Seattle, yes.
I guess about 4 years ago?
Yes, yes, I have that. It's somewhere, we don't know. This is coming in random order, so it may never be there, or it could be there in a second. So sand is a very interesting medium because it has this kind of a zen quality. And also, before you do anything, you must destroy what you just did before. Mm-hmm. So very often, artists take a lot of precaution to make sure that their work will last forever. But with sand, you know you have to destroy it, and you have to remodel and renew it. And
these Buddhist sand drawings they use with color sand to create universes.
The Tibetans.
Yeah.
Yes, they intentionally destroy it, because it's really part of the whole concept. And it's a kind of a sad thing that now they are commissioned to do those works in museum, and the museum wants to preserve their investment, mm-hmm. so they keep the mandalas forever while they should not.
Well, the Center of Modern Art Museum.
It has one.
It's an old thing.
Oh, man.
Actually, it's a little hole. I'm always tempted to blow some air.
Our art museum, they destroy them after they make it.
Yeah, but it's not about
that. Yes.
You can even buy one of those cans of compressors. But you must experiment with different kinds of sand, the grain size, and how wet the sand is.
Yes, actually. I met last fall a physicist. He's French, he's working here in the physics department, and he studies granular matter. Actually, I was the one to tell him that there will be a program on granular matter at KITP next year. And we're planning to make experiments. And for instance, one thing he wants me to do is, instead of using sand, is to use several kind of calibrated glass beads which can come in different colors, because I had noticed something, maybe it will show up in the sequence. I have been doing a pattern which is a square spiral which closes in, and when the ball makes a 90 degree turn along the diagonals, the sand changes colors. And actually, because of the change of speed of the ball in the sand, the biggest sand particles come on top instead of coming under. So we think that by being smart and using different size particles with different colors and playing with the speed of the ball, we can make very interesting things. So this is something that we have in line.
Is it different shape? This is a different shape ball. No.
It's always a sphere.
Have you experimented with different shapes?
Oh yes, I have even tried key rings and keys and spoons, but balls have the spheres have a geometric quality that makes them the best. And this is an idea which I have, but I never had the money to do it. Here you see three little rocks which are, here is the change of color of the sand. You see it's darker on the four diagonals. So the idea was actually to have rocks on the sand, have a camera on top of the sand tray, and do some image processing to find out where the rocks are, so that the ball trajectory would be changed in software to leave raw spots where the ball would not go, where I could put rocks or just turn around rocks. Because when you look at the Japanese gardens, of course, the monks with a rake, raking gravel, they walk around those big stones and they don't walk across. So I had the idea to do the same thing, but on that image, I was cheating. I did the change and then I put the rocks because I don't have the camera on top. To give you an idea of scale, this is about 1/8 of an inch. This is the resolution of what I succeed in doing. And across the sand tray, that the largest one I have is 3 feet by 3 feet. But it's very accurate. It's very interesting.
Do you have the animations?
Oh, yes. I have
Jean-Pierre, you know that also, if I remember correctly, I don't quite remember because I read the paper 20 years ago. You know, Einstein wrote a paper on the viscosity of red sand.
Did he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He noticed it was easier to walk on the beach when it was wet. And so he went home and wrote a paper.
Well, I noticed it too, but I never wrote a paper.
It's actually a non-trivial problem that's of great importance to the oil company because the oil going through porous rock is the same problem.
I'm desperately looking for those animations. Here they are, I guess. Well, maybe here. No. I'm sorry. No, that's what we are that's what we were looking at. Well, they are somewhere. Or animations. Could that be it? Yes, animation. Yes, here is one. Oh. So it doesn't go that fast. This was the first one I built and it took an entire afternoon. So the image is blue first because this was a morning light. And it ends up with electrical light. It took something like 7 hours and I was doing, you know, time lapse photography. But the drawings that I'm doing now, they take roughly from 30 minutes to 2 hours. The idea is that it should be slow and quiet. It's not a speed contest. But this was really too slow. I may have others. This was too fast. And somewhere I have. So that's about real speed. Oops. That's how the ball would move on the sand. Yes, there is a magnet to pull the ball. Interestingly, the ball is not dragged, it turns, okay. It rolls. And every time I ask a physicist why it does so, I have a different answer, which means that it's a very rich field.
Did you propose a program?
Whether your ball is solid or it's a shell.
No, it's solid, but sometimes it's a kind of a shell because I'm using also computer mouse balls, and so there is iron inside and rubber outside.
Is the ball pushed or pulled?
It's pulled. And the magnets are used are rare earth magnets. They are about 1 inch in diameter. And so there is a certain imprecision. So when the magnet make a sharp angle, the ball actually round that angle like a dog running after a hare. And I've always thought that I should correct my software to actually correct that effect so that I could have geometrically correct figures, but I've never done it. And what is interesting also with rendering drawings on sand is that the original graphics is not interesting at all. This is an ellipse with a number of tangents that comes out of it. But when it is in sand, it takes a whole life, and it's very different. All kind of things happen. It can be lit. You have shadows and light. And well, I found it interesting.
So you can input anything you want?
Yes.
You
yes.
You can input a Steinberg drawing?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Or your signature. Or
signature.
And actually, at
some page of Chinese.
Just yes. 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 I could do Steinberg. I could do most of the drawings that I have done on with ink on paper upstairs. Yeah. I could make on sand as well. And actually, David Gross would like to be able to have one of these in the patio. Yeah. And one of his requirements would be that all the visiting physicists could actually log into the system and take their curve into the sand as they wish. And that's iron particles from the sand, and they make little moustache on each side of the ball.
The fact that it pushes the sand.
It's also break the symmetry, translation symmetry.
So what made you think of using this technique to do these patterns instead of a rake? Like
Because I had the idea that everything could happen almost like by magic without people being able to clearly right away understanding how it happens. And it's kind of interesting to see the little ball run on the sand. And when we do that publicly, we have the most extraordinary comments and questions of people wondering how this can happen. But I think it was a good idea, and I just lucked out on it.
So that you had the intuition that it was going to make nice regular patterns?
Oh, yes, yes.
So you had experimented before?
Somewhere in the loop, I have the first curve that was made. It was a small ellipse. It was beautiful. But no, I thought the curves would be nice. And the demonstration was not done by me, but by all the monks raking gravel in the temple gardens.
Yeah, but it's remarkable that this ball can do such regular.
Yes. Oh, I knew, having used a lot of plotters to do the drawings that you can see upstairs, right, that you can control motors,
right,
to produce very accurate curve. So if you have good drivers and good math behind it to define curves, you are in complete control, and then the sand is a very reliable medium because grains are very even. So it worked.
Let me interrupt just I know coffee's begun, so we'll declare it officially over, but if you want to stay and ask questions down here, you're certainly welcome. Thank you.
I cannot compete with cookies.
You already have 10 coffees.